morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host for the program is Stone Payton, a vital cog at Business Radio X. You haven't heard that for a long time, have you?
I haven't heard it in a while. Well, you and I haven't worked together in
two, 3 weeks. Yeah, I like the way I've been here.
You've been here.
I've been here.
I've been drinking rum on the other side of the 7 Mile Bridge for a couple of weeks now, but I'm ready to get after it in the new year.
Well, that's great. Good time with the kids and the family?
We had a blast. All 10 of us headed to Key West, and we're all 10 still talking to each other.
That's even better.
Yeah, who'd know?
Good. Well, I'm glad you're back, and I know that.
Thank
well,
you.
You have my permission to ask questions. Sometimes you don't do that, but I just wanted to reaffirm that. All right.
Okay. I'll ask away.
All right. Well, a theme common to each Right Here, Right Now program is showing how individuals use the power of the pen to impact their business or career. Today's guests offer us a look at how each has mastered that power and continue to use it in their careers. They approached their writing from different perspectives. Evie Blasi wrote her first book, A Guide to Divorce, from someone who's been there, and subsequently launched a new career. And in her career, Melissa Galt challenges individuals to celebrate life, to live every day fully, and has written books, articles, speeches, and uses a lot of social media. So we're going to go alphabetically, and Evie, you win on both scores, first name and last. So Evie Blasi is a state-registered mediator. You tutor math, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're a mother and a grandmother and an author. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things I say to my clients, and I encourage people who want to write, is just write what you know. The idea of writing something new is virtually impossible because there are just so many books out there, and that really applies to you. I think you've done the epitome of what I encourage people to do, and that is you wrote a book about divorce. Why?
Well, first of all, let me say that you have been a very big encouragement to me to get these things out.
Stone, I did not pay her for that, okay?
However, quite true.
Thank you.
After going through an unwanted divorce, I realized there is so much that people are not aware of when they go through divorce.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not aware of the procedure. They're not aware of all the words you have to learn, you know, interrogatories and mediation and collaborative law and choosing lawyers and how best to go through this process.
And you elected to have a court trial for it as well, did you not?
That is correct.
So your guide, A Guide to Divorce, covers even that piece, which most people hope they don't have to go to.
That's right. Only 2% of divorces go through a trial, and I was one of that 2%, so I felt it was very important to include in my book
mm-hmm.
so that people would be aware of that also. And, of course, the most important issues, children's issues, that's one of the critical parts of the book. To understand what children are going through. Yeah.
Was it easy, difficult, in between, a mix to write it?
I would say it was a culmination of wanting to help people, of
mm-hmm.
really wanting to help people who do not understand the process. So after I went through the divorce, I realized the one positive thing was going through mediation
mm-hmm.
because I felt that was a very fair process. So that's where I began my new career, becoming a mediator. And then the more and more mediations I did, I realized people do not understand this whole process.
That it is possible to sit down and talk civilly.
That's right.
Okay.
That is right.
Now, you brought a different perspective to this, too, because your ex-husband is and was...
an attorney.
Mm-hmm. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And not just an attorney, but attorney. And this, you just floored him, didn't you? We won't go further than that, but what I'm putting out there is the fact that he, when you and I talked and I was coaching you in the writing of this, you kept saying he just did not anticipate this. He figured you were just going to basically roll over and sign off. And it didn't happen.
That's true. It was a lot to go through. It was a lot to go through. And I really want to empower people mm-hmm. so that they will understand the process, which has led me to another program of working with couples using a lot of these mediation techniques and conflict resolution so that people will stay married, so yeah. that people will be able to problem solve and stay in their marriages.
And that's what writing the Guide to Divorce did for you. It opened up that whole concept. What is a state-registered right. mediator?
Well, you have to go through a training program. You have to learn skills in conflict resolution. And you have to be registered with the state. You have to do mediations. You have to watch mediations. And again, it's a very good process. Mm-hmm. It's a very good process, the process of mediation.
How do you find clients, or do they find you?
Either you go through the court systems, or it's basically people that you're recommended to, or mm-hmm. you register with each different county
okay.
to get court-registered mediations.
But when you started writing your Guide to Divorce, this was not on the top of the list of things to do, become a mediator. But in the process of writing, you saw something more there.
Well, I realized that couples go through a lot. There are a lot of unresolved issues. And when we would sit in mediation and work with couples, it was wonderful to watch them working one-on-one, trying to solve their issues. And I just thought, why don't we do this before we're sitting at the divorce table? Why don't mm-hmm. we do this sooner? So that couples are empowered to understand arguing and conflict and issues they're going through and be able to sit and go through this process with each other to save their marriages.
Yeah. And it is okay to fight in a marriage, right?
I don't know. Is that okay? You tell me.
Whoa! If you fight clean, and that's what you help people understand, right?
Right, and it's the idea, is conflict always bad? No, it is mm-hmm. not bad. It is a way to understand each other. Mm-hmm. It is a way to really get to know each other better. It's the method you use to solve these problems
exactly.
that's important to learn.
Now, do you find that after couples have been working with you for a while that they pick up some of those skills and they see you modeling some questioning and that kind of thing, and so they really do better on their own? They don't always necessarily have right. to be in the office with you to go through a good, productive conversation?
That is correct. That is correct. And, yes, I've worked with several couples who have kept their marriages intact, going through this process, learning how to understand each other better, learning what the conflicts are, learning to respect each other, and following a program of conflict resolution. And it really actually is wonderful to see that. That brings me great joy when I see couples who are struggling eventually stay together.
And you're working on creating a workshop seminar and a workbook or manual to go with that.
That's right. That's what I'm doing right now.
And because we're on radio and they can't see, I'm flipping through the manuscript of that. And it's quite exciting, the kind of stuff that she has in here. One of the phrases that she uses, that Evie uses throughout it, is, when you did what you did, you gets what you got. Tell our listeners about that. Where'd that come from, and what do you mean by that? Because I just, every time I run across it when I'm reading your manuscript, I chuckle.
When you did what you did, you get what you got. Meaning, if you try to solve problems the same way that you've been trying to solve them, it's not going to work. You have to change your whole perspective on it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you run out of the room every time you have a disagreement, that disagreement is never going to be solved. It's going to be the same over and over and over again. You have to decide. You have to consciously decide to change that pattern.
Okay.
To change that situation. Right. And it's hard. It's very hard. It's very difficult mm-hmm. to change some of the patterns that we're in for years and years and years.
Oh, sure. Well, you were not a writer. You wrote your book, Guide for Divorce. Then you wrote a family book. Then you wrote a children's book. What what kind of bug bit you? How did this all come about? Because, you know, I've looked at them all. Talk to our people about how did you get into writing and why has it been so much fun for you?
I think I've always liked writing and journaling, and but this is just a wonderful avenue to express yourself and just have people remember who you are and learn from you.
Mm-hmm.
My children's book came out of the fact that I grew up in New York City, and I have children in all different parts of the country, and I thought they would never understand how I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Running around in New York City. So I thought it would be a way to preserve my history for them.
Mm-hmm.
And in that I included old pictures. I included a lot of history of my parents so that it would be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's a lot of fun doing that. It brings back a lot of happy memories. And it just brought me great joy to do that book.
Now, you have two brothers, correct?
That is correct.
And you were the youngest of the mix?
I was the youngest.
Okay. Because I remember after we had worked on your family overview book, your brothers were just astounded at the kinds of things you remember.
That's right. And I think it really affected them and my dad because I brought back a lot of memories of our childhood and growing up, which was great fun, which led me to my children's book on moving because children go through moves, and this can be very traumatic to children.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'm going to use the history of my children and write a children's book on moving. So one book kind of led to the next book, and it's just been really great fun.
So is writing a children's book, did you find it easier, harder, or just different?
Writing a children's book is fun because I love children, and it's just so nice thinking that you're relating to children. It was different. It was very different, and you have to look for different things. You need an artist. You have to think of what words you're using that'll relate to what age children. So it is different, but it's great fun.
But you were also a school teacher for of years. So you were aware of a lot of the issues that people aren't when they begin to write for children.
Right.
And that's, you know, Stone, when you ask that question, you've heard me say that I don't ever see myself writing a children's book because it's tough. You're limited in words, and God knows I don't like to be limited.
And I certainly had to cut back and cut back and cut back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first draft was just full of facts and information, and I said, this is not going to work for children.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to cut back and make it much simpler and much easier to
What a great book
read.
Idea, though. I mean, that is if I were going to move, I would, and I had young children, I would definitely want that book.
Yeah, that's great.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah.
And there aren't that many books on moving for children.
No, there aren't.
So I researched that, went to the library and looked at a lot of books, and there just aren't a lot of books on moving for children.
So do you have any ideas or designs on a divorce-related book for children, like helping them work through that?
Not at this point. I can see some more fun books going with this. Maybe, you know, getting a new brother in the family. It's all taken from life experiences from my four children.
And so that's the critical piece that I like to lift up to folks. You have taken your life experience and you've applied your perspective and put it in books. And that's what's neat. And others can learn from it, laugh from it, enjoy it.
I think we all have so much to share.
Mm-hmm.
And writing has just been an escape for me, a wonderful way to express my feelings.
Oh, that's great. So tell me, how do people get in contact with you? If they want to pursue this and hear your secrets or maybe even buy your book, how should they do that?
Okay, so my email is evie@juno.com. And my webpage is www.aguidetodivorce.com.
Okay.
So I'm very happy to get feedback, to get information. I'm very happy to communicate with others.
And mediate if need be.
And truly.
That's great. Well, I know, because we rehearsed this part. You're willing to sit still while I shift in my chair, correct? Don't embarrass me at this point.
Okay. I will do that.
All right. Well, I'm shifting, and now I'm looking square on to Melissa Galt. She's the person behind Prosper by Design, building better relationships for a better bottom line. Boy, is that onomatopoeia. you know that word, don't you, Stone?
I certainly can't spell it. But what does it mean? Because I have heard it. But no, I don't know what it means.
It's the repetition of sound. And she's got it there, building better relationships for a better bottom line. And it has an effect, words, alliteration, all that. She's a speaker, an author, amazingly energetic, insightful, and holds your feet to the fire, as I have found out in working with her. Welcome.
Thank you, Tim.
Celebrate your life. How did that come about? Celebrating every day, good common sense stuff, a lot of intriguing memories in there. I read through it. How did that come about?
I was committed to a speaking event, and when I sat down with them to flesh out the details, I said, I can write a book for your event.
Oh, boy. There you go.
It seemed a brilliant idea at the time. I had about a 9-month lead time.
Mm-hmm.
At the 6-month mark, I realized I had not put pen to paper, and time was fast approaching with a deadline. So it was starting to get a little crunchy, and I explored the length of time it would take me to get it physically published.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I had about a week to 2 weeks to write the
book.
Oh,
my. And this is not a term paper, is it?
But, it was really interesting because I work extremely well under high-pressure deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
Once I created the outline, which took me probably a couple days, literally the book came onto paper in 48 hours.
See, it can be done, Stone. It can be done.
How's that for speed?
Yeah. You know something about speed.
Yeah. What a great testimony. I got to put that in the next book.
The editing and formatting was actually a lot more painful than the writing of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't excel at either one of them. I don't edit well. And I had a friend of mine involved in the process. We're actually no longer friends. I don't recommend anyone do that. I treasure the friendship, and I wish to goodness I hadn't put her in that position because she does not work well under hard deadlines, whereas I do. So that was a tough one for us. And I actually did pull the book back out a year later, and I added 30 pages to it. That took me 2 weeks.
Wow.
So that was adding more of the personal stories behind the ways you can celebrate. And people get confused sometimes and think it's a book about how to throw a party, and it's definitely not.
No.
But it is about how to take the ordinary and turn it into extraordinary on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found that too many people are waiting until they're 60 and 70 and retired, and they're waiting for that point when they have the time and maybe the resources, although now not so much, to per se enjoy life and celebrate it. And I'm like, well, first of all, none of us know when we're going to get there.
Exactly.
We're only assured that we get the big dirt nap, not when it happens.
Yes.
And, life is fragile, perishable, and incredibly unpredictable. So why wait?
Yeah. Well, there's a story in there that just pops into my mind, burnt marshmallows. Would you share that story, please? That's one of your memories, and it's not something one would think of, well, let's celebrate burnt marshmallows, but you did.
Well,
in a way.
I did in a way. And, the thing is, I'm one of these folks that is a little unusual. I am a foodie, and whenever we would make s'mores and do marshmallow roast, I love to get mine charred, and I would eat the char. I'm sure it's not good for you.
Carcinogenic, but that's okay.
Any more than cooking hot dogs in a gas flame torch is good for you. It's not. It's not. I don't recommend it. But, there's something about the marshmallow experience when you char something and then you eat it and you have that new beginning. And then you char it again and you eat it and you get the new beginning. And it's also about not throwing away something that is, in some people's words, that would be failure.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the funny thing about that marshmallow is I recently went to a 30-plus-year high school reunion.
Oh,
and
my.
It was the very first reunion I'd attended.
Hmm.
And we were on the beach late night. There were probably about 30 of us there. And there were a lot of kids running around. And I was charring my marshmallows. And everybody was appalled at this, except for the kids. The kids got it.
Like,
that's how I like my marshmallows.
Yeah,
it's the charring of the marshmallow and the whole, it's not bad. It's what you make of it. And it's whether that's what you like or not. And I'm not willing to sit there and turn it golden brown. It's too much work.
It is.
It's too much work. I want the shortcut.
You put it in there, light it on fire, blow it out, and eat it. What I like about the book is, there are many things, but you tackle a whole lot of life issues, health, parties, family gatherings. Just how did you come up with all those?
Well, I've always kind of divvied life up into different areas, and you can't have a great life without great health. You really are not going to have a great life without great friends, if not great family. And while I have great family, they're at such a distance, I've really turned my friends into my family.
Mm.
We spend so much of our lives in the workplace that if you can't find the celebration in your work, you're really in trouble. And, you know, other areas like celebrating your home environment. I feel, because I've got 15 years as an independent interior designer, that creating the right environment for your life is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies to the workplace as well. Many people ignore their environments and create toxic lives subsequently.
Ooh. Yeah, they do. There's something, another story or celebration that you talk about that struck me. Letters. Your mother.
Oh, yeah.
Gifts and letters. And let me help you with that in the sense that I keep on a table beside me in the chair that I always go into when I want to meditate or do deep thinking or whatever is a card from my older son that he sent me for Father's Day that he wrote in it. Things about me that just dads long to hear. And I got it while I still was sensible or relatively so. So that's your segue into.
Yeah, it was funny because my mother was always very hard to buy for anyway at the holidays. And she'd been asking for a letter from each of us for years. And I was just like, a letter? That's not a gift. And that's too hard. I don't want to do a letter. So I waited and waited and waited and waited. And finally, I got smart. And I thought, you know what, she has been asking for this. So I sat down and I wrote her the letter. And to me, it was not that big a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to her, it was huge. It was monumental. She was in tears of joy over the letter and treasured it and savored it. And the interesting thing about it is that when my mom passed back in 85, very, very suddenly, the only thing each of us got pertaining to our growing up. You know, most parents will save baby booties and, you know, the little pencil cups and the little handprints. None of that.
Hmm.
None of that. There was a file folder with each of our names and our letters.
Wow.
And there was more than our letters in there because there were, you know, a few school commendations and things like that. And then in the case of my mom, you know, you always go through a hardship with your parents at some point. And we used to write her hate notes.
Oh.
And my mother would take the hate note, she would flip it over, and she would write, I love you, I love you, I love you, and shove it back under the door.
Oh, my.
Because you know, there's always a door in between, and we're sliding it under the door, and it was really pretty ridiculous. But it, you know, I've never forgotten that, how she would just take the hate and flip it over, I love you, I love you, I love you, and slide it back under the door.
Oh, my. That's powerful.
Yeah.
You tear up a little bit even now.
Yeah.
See, I have to put in these sound effects and all that. Some people can't see, and I can see it. You wrote the book because you had a seminar coming up, and you said, I can write a book. Have you done any other writing? What motivates you to write?
Yeah, I actually did. I wrote Designing Your Signature Life, which then became Designing Your Signature Success, and it's a manual for life success. And I created that in a step-by-step format. I took the 10 life areas that I had, and I broke that down in a way that people could easily self-guide through the program and improve different areas of their life at different times. The key is, and I stress this, you only tackle a maximum of 3 at a time. Because if you try to do it all, you'll get none of it done. Okay. And you'll go into overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, it would be rare to have someone that didn't have one area of their life working.
Oh.
We hope.
Oh, okay. I needed to hear that.
So what happens is you work on, you know, one to three areas. Mm-hmm. And then as they get where you want them to go, you let them go and you pick up a new area that needs some work.
Okay.
You know, and you're not trying to juggle all of them at once. It just won't work. And the areas that are working, for goodness sakes, don't mess with them. Leave them alone.
Yeah.
They're working.
Yeah, okay. And is it safe to say that a lot of what you've put into your book is out of your own practical experience, your own life journey?
Oh, yeah. It's out of my life journey. It's also out of the life journey of my clients because as an interior designer, I've had the privilege of getting really close to my clients and mm-hmm. seeing the insides of their lives. And I've always joked that, you know, as a designer, you kind of need a degree in psychology because you find out more about your client than you ever really wanted to know.
No.
And so, you know, I am aware of the insides of their relationships. Mm-hmm. I'm not married, probably in large part because of that.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to skip mediation. Thank you, Abby.
All right.
But yeah, it is about my life experience, my mother's life experiences because she was a great storyteller. My friends, I pull on the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And I approach life much as an observer
mm-hmm.
and as a storyteller.
That's great. I like that. And you tell stories through how you design.
Yes.
Too.
Yes, I do.
You're not going to anticipate this question. It just kind of came to you're a graduate of Cornell.
I am.
Cornell is one of the Ivy League schools.
Where is this going?
Which means it was an all-male institution for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you in the mix? You were among the first women students there?
I think I was within the first 5 years or so.
Okay. Because, see, I went to Lehigh, which was an all-male school, and the dean checked to see when I was leaving the school, and then the next semester they made it co-ed. Seriously, it became co-ed after I left. It was happenstance. But we're celebrating, Lehigh's celebrating 40 years since that first admission. So there's a whole lot of dynamic. And I just think about your own journey, as I've read in your book. That had to be a challenge to be among the first women students at an all-male institution.
It was actually more of a challenge in boarding school because boarding school, I was only the second class of girls.
Oh.
And so that was, and we were a very small percentage of the student body.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very apparent that it was an all-boys school. In fact, when I went to reunion, they talked about the three forms before me, and they were all boys in the pictures. There were no girls.
Oh.
So it was really very interesting. At Cornell, I don't recall it being such a big deal.
Okay.
And I certainly didn't have anything to do with that decision. It was my mother's idea. I thought that I wouldn't get in, so I thought I'd apply and shut her up, and it backfired on me. When I got in, I was like, well, okay, you don't pass up this level of education. Now you have to go. And I'm like, oh, boy. So that was how that happened.
And I may be stretching here, but when I think about that and I think of what you went through and all of that, and still you have the audacity and the delight in talking about celebrating life.
Yeah, because I believe in making the best of any situation. And in the case of Cornell, I wouldn't want to go back and do it again necessarily. It was a very painful 4 years. I did graduate in 4 years. Yay!
Yeah.
But I got one awesome education, and
yes,
that has
did.
Served me in extremely good stead. Even if most people look at me, cock their head, and go, "You went to Cornell?" Like, I don't know, I'm supposed to have ivy sprouting my ear out of my ears and be arrogant or something like that. I've never leveraged it. I've never touted it. I've never done anything like that with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really glad in retrospect that I went because I did get an incredibly great education.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you still actively do interior design work?
About 30% of
really?
My business. Yeah, I stay in that because I feel like because I mentor and coach business owners, it's important for me to own a small business separate from my coaching, speaking, and writing practice that keeps my fingers on the pulse of what that's like.
Cool. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But you have taken what you learned and practice as an interior design person into your coaching, right?
Yeah, because the marketing piece of that, I launched my practice 6 months premature to plan startup on a shoestring. I was working nights and weekends in a hot, sweaty catering kitchen, supervising the kitchen, and then running the dish machine. Very exciting stuff. And when I got it off the ground, I didn't have a mentor. And I really was bootstrapping it, and I got very creative in my marketing, and I took a lot of marketing courses through the internet, which was fledgling at that time. Back in 94, I had my first website, and I've always been sort of ahead of the curve. I hesitate to use the word state-of-the-art or leading edge, although there are some, especially colleagues, that would call me that. And I'm not a techie, although my colleagues would call me one. So I did a lot of things differently, and they worked really, really well because my results far outstripped the norm. And I didn't realize that until about 5 years in. And then I started teaching at evening at Emory, and one of the classes I taught was small business marketing magic.
Oh, my.
So, you know, that sort of...
There's your Cornell education.
Yeah.
Your Cornell
yeah.
pedigree
yeah.
got you into Emory.
So when you're coaching these people, do they make some of the same mistakes over and over? Do you see some of the same patterns?
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of it is they don't have a plan, or they have too many tools and not enough strategy. And with too many tools, they'll dabble in 25 tools instead of focusing on three. And when they get to that focus point, that's when things really start to take off. Because dabbling doesn't work. I'm able to take them out of bright, shiny opportunity syndrome and bring them into fast focus. And that's when their results start occurring.
Say more about that.
Well, it's about having the tools available to you, but knowing which ones are going to work best for not only your business, but your personality type.
Okay.
And finding out what your strengths and weaknesses are. And I believe that marketing should become a point of second nature. Marketing is not something I ever did with a deliberateness, like I'm going to market today. It was more I was so excited and so enthusiastic about what I was doing that that just became my magnetic attractor.
Okay.
And what I try to do with my clients is find that magnetism and flip that switch.
Wow, I like that image. That's a good one.
Because that way it's coming from inside of them, and it's not a veneer that they're putting on that feels contrived, that feels salesy, that feels slick, that feels superficial, and all those uncomfortable things that people associate with marketing. I want marketing to become second nature so that you're not even marketing anymore. You're just being the core of who you are, bringing your excited, talented essence to the table, and people are connecting to you because of that.
Okay. Any other book in the making for you?
Yes. In fact, there is.
Imagine that.
I knew the answer to that.
Oh, did you? I did. I, honest to God, I didn't.
Well, I actually,
just from listening to her talk, I knew there's got to be at least one more book.
I actually have several ebooks, and I'm considering putting a couple of them up on Kindle. One of them is 7 Surefire Steps to Marketing That Makes You Money, because I believe that marketing should make you money, or there's no point to it. I also am going to be doing one probably in the next 30 to 60 days. As soon as I create the outline for it, to do with interpersonal skills and relationship building and focusing exclusively on the various relationships we have in our lives. So our relationship with ourselves is first, our relationship with friends and family, our relationship with clients and customers, our relationship will include our health because that's part of our relationship with ourself, our relationship to travel, because that has a lot to do with how we interact with strangers and how open we are to other cultures, customs, and people around the globe. And it's really going to be about the different ways you can build better relationships, not only for your bottom line, but for your bottom line in life.
See, there it goes. Yeah. Build better relationships for a better bottom line. You've got that learned, don't you?
Well, it's prospering by design.
and in order
to do that, you've got to be able to build those relationships. And the key is with yourself as well as with others. Because if you leave yourself out, your ones with others aren't going to take you where you want to go.
That's true. Well, thank you for sharing. I'm going to open up, well, the mics have always been open, but now I'm going to say we can all talk. Stone, you look poised. Got a question for anybody?
Well, I have a ton of questions. We got to have both of these ladies back. I don't think one show can contain them. But I'm interested specifically, this whole idea of using books as part of getting the word out and setting the foundation for building relationships. Have you found the book at this point, or any of the book work that you've done, has actually helped you make more money or get the word out better, or have you command a higher speaking fee?
Well, the book is a gateway in many regards, and there's an expression that your book is your big business card, and it really is. And I've had engagements that, because I had the book, they were like, oh, and we're going to buy a copy for everybody in the audience.
Cool.
Or when I did an engagement and I had a book signing afterwards, everyone wanted a piece of me, and that was their way to take that piece of me home, was via the book.
Mm-hmm. And you're not doing that exactly, Evie, but you're using your book as the basis in part for your seminar or workshop that you're developing, right?
Right. I am working on this book to get out so that people can read it and work on their conflicts and do this at home and do this in their own privacy and learn through reading.
And so why I wanted the two of you on together is you went into the work, Melissa, and then wrote. You had a life experience, wrote,
right,
and then went into the business, so to speak. And it's what I like to lift up, is we can go at these from all kinds of angles, and just go inside and find that book and write it. How did you do it, Stone?
How did I write a book?
Yeah.
I had the keynote, and so the book was essentially my keynote.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where writing it came from. But I found that I was able to command a higher fee, and most of my book sales weren't really separate sales. It's like Melissa's talking about. Mm-hmm. I would book a gig, and I would include X number of books, or they would ask for it. And it would help me secure the speaking engagement.
Sure. And see, there's a take home for you, Evie. When you get going, when you make those approaches and get booked, right, you say, "Oh, my book."
Right. Right.
See, didn't anticipate that knowledge day, right?
But I didn't have any onomatopoeia. What'd you call it?
Onomatopoeia.
Yeah, that one.
I don't know. I need to hire a professional and get some of that good stuff in there, some of that mojo in there.
Just you stick with. Stick with me and my permanent guest host, Vanessa, and we'll get you going.
Fair enough.
You're excuse me. You graduated from a college in New York, didn't you?
In New York, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Utica College, upstate New York. So yeah. Had a lot of snow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've got the New York accent. Melissa does not. But it's been a delight. Any other questions, each for the other or whatever? I always escape on this one. I don't get asked anything.
I do have a question. Uh-oh. I wonder if either or both of you would be willing to come back sometime, maybe bring a delighted client and hear from their perspective about what you've done in their lives. I think that would make for a really cool show.
Sure.
Would y'all be up for that sometime?
Yeah. Sure.
And do we have to fight over whether they're on high velocity radio or right here, right now?
Well, they're coming on high. No, of course. We'll do whatever.
Whatever works. But that we would like to do that. That would be great. Well, the clock is on us. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. And if you would like to recommend a guest or to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and keeping me on track. And I thank our guests, Evie Blasi and Melissa Galt. And Melissa, I forgot to ask you for your contact information. So you can do it two or three times right now.
Best way to reach me is just Melissa@MelissaGalt, G-A-L-T, just like John Galt in the book.com. Or you can just check out MelissaGalt.com and go ahead and opt in to get the goodies and get on the e-zine, because I send out a fresh article every week, sometimes twice a week if you're really lucky. And I also have, interestingly, I've started doing a daily 5 days a week motivation moment, Move It Forward. And I create that, and then I have a take action 3 steps. I'm getting an incredible feedback on that from people. Okay. They'd really wanted a step-by-step, and they said, 3 steps we can work with, and something every day, just a little teeny bite. Mm-hmm. So that's a separate opportunity because I don't, you know, force that on everybody. It's entirely up to you whether that's a fit for you or not. So it's Melissa at melissagalt.com or just melissagalt.com.
And it works. I've tried them both. Okay. Evie, your contact information again.
Okay. Once again, Evie, E-V-Y at Juno, J-U-N-O.com. My webpage is aguidetodivorce.com. And I'm happy to hear your comments and thoughts.
Great. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you, good thing we're coming to an end. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now and invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business. Right Here, Right Now.